street, likely on her way to the Emerald. She waved me over.
Close call this morning, she said with a grin.
I followed her around the corner and we stopped at the front door of her spa.
I'm sorry we forgot Nick was at the house, Holly. I hope you're not too mad at us. I don't think any damage was done.
I'm not mad, I assured her. She pushed into the day spa, and Lucy, who was sitting at the reception desk, greeted us. She clicked through something on the thin computer monitor, and then filled Evangeline in on the events of the morning. Then offered to give me a manicure since her first client of the day had canceled. I shrugged and took my place at her workstation. I wasn't one to turn down a fresh manicure. Lucy joined me and started soaking my fingers to get rid of the polish she'd put on a week ago. With no customers in the spa, Evangeline and I told Lucy about the events of the last few days. She was a telepath, but had grown up in the human world, not understanding her abilities. She hadn't learned anything about the supernatural world until a few years back. Needless to say, she found the entire story overwhelming. As she was finishing up the top coat of clear polish, Ben, the masseur and resident town beefcake, came out from behind the thick emerald curtain that separated the back of the spa from the retail space.
"Hey, Holly,"
he called out, his arms laden with boxes.
"I'm glad you're back in town. I could really use another batch of that salve you made for my hands when you get a chance."
With her back to him, Evangeline cringed and mouthed, "Sorry."
"I'll see what I can do," I told him with a polite smile. "Great, thanks."
He crossed the shop and backed up against the front door to let himself out.
"I'm off. See you tomorrow."
Evangeline wriggled her fingers.
"Have a nice night."
Lucy and I waved and echoed her sentiment. Ben pushed out the door, and Evangeline frowned over at me.
"Sorry about that," she said. "He was asking where you'd gone, and I said you went into the Haven to get some supplies and would be back in business when you got back. I didn't think there was any way your petition could possibly get denied."
I scoffed.
"Yeah, me either."
"I'm so sorry, Holly. If you need a job, I can hire you to help out around here. Half-price discount on product, excellent benefits, and the free perk of getting to ogle Ben all day long. Although Adam might not appreciate that last part."
I laughed.
"Yeah, probably not."
Evangeline nudged me with her hip as she passed by.
"Not that he has to worry."
"What about you and Teddy? You two seemed pretty cozy."
Lucy gawked up at Evangeline.
"You've been holding out on me."
Evangeline laughed and waved a hand.
"I keep telling you, we're just friends."
I raised a skeptical brow and arched it at Lucy, my meaning clear.
"Yeah, right,"
Lucy giggled.
"Well, here's a tip from your old married friend. Make sure you get along with his mother before you start picking out wedding dresses and flower arrangements."
We all laughed. Evangeline ducked her chin and considered her own manicured nails.
"I shouldn't laugh. Teddy's mother actually passed away several years ago."
Lucy held up a finger with a wicked grin.
"So old!"
I tried to stifle my laugh, but failed miserably.
"Now, I'm not saying I want Adam's mother to die, but I certainly wouldn't be heartbroken if she suddenly relocated to somewhere far, far away."
"Like Australia?"
I grinned.
"I was thinking more like the moon."
Lucy's eyes glittered.
"Excellent! She can take Gordy's mother with her. I mean, hey, someone has to start colonizing it, right?"
Chapter 9. With my mood lightened and my nails polished to sleek perfection, I headed home, where a solemn Teddy was waiting to speak with me. Dark clouds rolled over my newly uplifted outlook as I followed him into the kitchen where he'd set up his temporary office. "Should I be sitting down for this?" I asked, after putting on the kettle to make some tea. Teddy, who was sitting at the head of the table, shook his head.
"It's nothing like that."
"Phew," he smiled politely.
"I spoke with a representative at Council Hall today. They were able to access the final judgment from the hearing. It appears the council has decided not to enforce the banishment. You're officially free to come and go from any haven."
"That's good news," I said, although I wasn't sure how much I would be using that privilege.
"Yes, it bodes well for the petitions I filed. I'm hoping to get before the council by the end of the month. First, I'll have to argue that the original hearing was biased, which means I need to figure out why it was biased.
We need to figure out who that witch was, the young one. Teddy nodded.
I asked the clerk today, but they weren't able to disclose that information over the phone. Some asinine rule. Unfortunately, the council members tend to live very private lives and rarely allow their names to be released in the press, for fear of revenge from unhappy petitioners.
Gee, I wonder why. It's not like they're unfair and callous.
Teddy frowned at me. Clearly, I was not helping. In any case, once we clear that hurdle, we will be able to get before a new council and present our case. However, as you and I both know, without Harvey, it's going to be difficult to convince them. I've put in a request with his assistant to see if she can find any notations on what he planned to testify about. If we could find some kind of statement of intent, it might work just as well as his actual testimony.
What would you need me to do?
Mostly be patient with me. This process could take some finagling. The other thing I wanted to ask was whether or not you could think of anyone who would want to block you from becoming a potions master. The way that witch came out firing made it seem like more than just a decision based on your past. It seemed personal in nature.
I agree. I sighed. But I don't know why anyone would care. It's not like I was applying to be a potions master for the council or some other prestigious job. I just want to make my potions and sell them to supers who need them. That's all.
I know that. But I wonder if maybe someone else might have a different perception of your intentions.
I shrugged. If so, I have no idea. I'll go through a list of my clients and see if anything pops. Other than the people I sell to, the only other supers who would know about my ability are the ones who tested me in the academy. But that was so long ago, I can't imagine any of them caring.
All right. Well, let me know what you come up with, if anything.
I will. The kettle was boiling, and I moved to fill a mug with a hefty scoop of tea leaves. It hadn't been raining on my walk home, but it was far from balmy outside, and the chill of the brisk walk still clung to me. After everything that had happened, I decided a hot cup of tea and a long, leisurely soak in the tub was exactly what I needed to put the awful events behind me. A few days passed, with no word from the Haven Council in reply to Teddy's petition, or from the SPA regarding Harvey's murder investigation. As Teddy predicted, the Haven Herald and the Witchwire both picked up the story and were reporting on it around the clock. Unfortunately, it had reached a sticking point where the same tidbits were recycled every hour or so, with nothing new added. Reporters had called, trying to get a comment from me, as I was publicly known as one of the last people to see Harvey alive. Teddy fielded the calls and requests in between, trying to figure out the identity and motive of the witch who had so vehemently opposed me at the hearing. He was also waiting to hear back from Harriet, Harvey's assistant, to see if she found a note or other documentation to provide to the council in lieu of his testimony. Evangeline was kept busy at the spa, as always, and Adam was swamped with his own work, leaving me lonely and bored. My hours at Siren's Song had been dramatically cut back while I pursued my potions business, so I was left with large gaps in my day while everyone else was busy. Boots and I puttered around in the greenhouse a few hours each day, and I experimented with baking, thinking it might prove to be a suitable replacement for potion work. In the end, all it did was add a few thousand calories to my daily intake. One night after Siren's Song closed, I met Cassie for a happy hour at McNally's. We chatted about life and our respective relationships. It was a nice break from the monotony of wandering aimlessly through the manor all day. By the fourth day, I was full-blown stir-crazy and called Agent Bramble. She was my only real connection to what was going on with the investigation. Surprisingly, as soon as I called, she informed me I was on her list of people to call that day. She invited me to come to her office for a meeting that afternoon. I couldn't get her to discuss anything over the phone, but accepted the invitation and hurried to get ready. After a quick shower and change of clothes, I went into the kitchen to find Adam sitting at the table, a jar of marshmallow fluff in one hand and a giant spoon in the other. He looked up as I pushed into the room and noted my outfit.
Where are you going?
I have a meeting with my new gal pal, Agent Bramble. Adam pulled a face. That should be fun. She seemed like a real party. Tell me about it.
Does the SBA only hire supers who were born without a shred of personality, or do they just strip it away during their training process?
Adam grinned as he waved his spoon through the air. I don't know, and I have no intention of finding out. I laughed.
Probably for the best, I said, pointing at his spoon. I'm pretty sure SBA agents aren't allowed to eat garbage like that.
Adam grabbed the warehouse store-sized jar of the revolting goo that could easily double as spackle or tile grout, and dug a huge dollop out.
What does she want to talk about?
I don't know yet. I'm assuming it's about Harvey. But for all I know, she might want to introduce me to a new caseworker or grill me to make sure I'm respecting the council's orders and not secretly cooking up potions. Adam arched a brow.
Not that you would ever do that.
Yeah, I know. Trust me, I've learned my lesson. I paced across the kitchen and pulled open the fridge. Even though I'd be using the SBA portal and wouldn't have to drive to and from Seattle, I still wanted a little snack before leaving. It would lower the odds of me blowing half a week's worth of tip money on lemon clouds. I'm pretty sure if I step one toe out of line, Agent Bramble will shift into an eagle and carry me off to her nest. Adam chuckled.
Now there's a visual.
I frowned and pulled out a container of blueberries. They were out of season and cost a small fortune to buy fresh from Thistle, but it was my one vice. Okay, not counting lemon clouds and bear claws. Those particular treats had surpassed vice territory some time ago and had slid into the land of full-blown addiction.
Any progress toward getting a second council hearing?
Adam asked when I joined him at the table.
I don't know. With everything else going on, I haven't really given it much thought. Unless Teddy can get me a different panel, I doubt it would do much good.
Still no clue who the witchy witch was?
I shook my head and popped a few blueberries in my mouth.
He's trying to get a name. For whatever reason, it's like top-secret information. You want me to do a little digging?
Adam asked nonchalantly, as if being a super spy was one of his side hobbies. I arched a brow. How are you planning on digging? The Haven doesn't use technology. It's not like you can hack into their system or something.
Oh, ye of little faith.
He smiled and polished off the last bit of the marshmallow fluff and returned the lid to the glass jar.
You're forgetting that my dad works for Haven Law Enforcement. He didn't get to the top of his field without making some pretty important connections. He knows most everyone in government.
Even in Seattle? Adam's parents lived in the Boston Haven. Adam shrugged and made a grab for some of the blueberries.
Probably. I'll give him a call and see what I can find out.
I turned the offer over in my head a few times and then nodded. All right. Can't hurt, I suppose. Although I would probably avoid mentioning that you're asking on my behalf. Somehow I don't think that would spark much interest.
Come on, gorgeous.
Adam frowned.
I know their visit was a little rocky, but that doesn't mean they don't like you or wouldn't want to help.
Unconvinced, I held back my reply and dumped another handful of berries into my mouth instead. Adam laughed and went to rummage through the cabinets for his next snack. I polished off the carton of blueberries, or at least the ones Adam hadn't swiped for himself, and got up from the table. You going to be around tonight? He turned, his hand clasping a sleeve of crackers.
Sure. Why? You want to go out for dinner?
I nodded. That would be nice. I could use a little break.
You got it, gorgeous. I promise to keep you completely occupied.
Adam grinned, but stopped short of giving a full eyebrow wiggle. I laughed and then crossed the kitchen to give him a quick kiss.
Also, can you feed Boots?
Less appealing, but sure.
Thanks.
I strode back to the kitchen door. I'll see you tonight. Adam leaned back against the counter and tore open the crackers.
You know, you should take some of Evie's healthy cookies to your meeting.
I paused in the doorway.
Why's that?
Have you ever tried one?
He flashed a menacing grin.
They taste just like bird food.
I rolled my eyes.
Do you have much experience with eating bird food?
Only when the McNally's dumpster is running low,
he said with a shrug. I shook my head. I think I'll pass on the cookies.
Suit yourself, but if she gets peckish, don't come crying to me.
I groaned. It's a good thing you're pretty. Adam chuckled and popped a cracker into his mouth.
See you tonight, gorgeous. Good luck with the bird lady.
I waved and then pushed out of the kitchen, letting the door flap closed behind me. Chapter 10. A little over an hour later, I was seated in Agent Bramble's office, waiting for her to return from taking an urgent phone call in the other room. We'd barely begun our discussion before she was called away, and I still wasn't sure of the exact purpose behind her summons. Her office was small, barely large enough for her desk, chair, and a set of filing cabinets. The only drop of personality in the room was a potted plant in the corner. But somehow, despite the size, everything was neatly organized and clean. I had no idea where she was keeping all of her supplies, but everything was tucked away out of sight. Not so much as a speck of dust marred the smooth, polished surface of the cherrywood desk. The office was surrounded by windows, and the occupant of the office next door hadn't closed their shades. The neighboring office was roughly the same size as Agent Bramble's, and contained the same SPA-issued furniture. That was where the similarities ended. In stark contrast to Agent Bramble's order and neatness, the one next door was a disaster area. Cartons from local eateries littered the desktop, which was completely covered with stacks and piles of paperwork. Two file boxes sat at the edge of the desk, but if there was a system in place, it would be impossible to follow as each of them was stuffed to bursting. A dark coat hung on the back of the chair, indicating the occupant was somewhere nearby. It looked like the one Agent Mache had worn to the initial interview. If I was Agent Bramble, I would pull the shades on my own side of the shared wall so I wouldn't have to look at the mess all day. I wasn't by any stretch a neat freak, but it was impossible to look at it and not want to snap on a pair of rubber gloves and get to work clearing the clutter. I was still frowning at the empty office when I sensed movement behind me. I swiveled around in my chair just as Agent Bramble entered the room. Her appearance was just as orderly as her office. Both her fitted tweed skirt and long-sleeved eggplant blouse were wrinkle-free and looked as though they'd come straight from the dry cleaner. There were spells that could be applied to clothing to render them resistant to stains, wrinkles, stretching, or shrinking. However, those charms were only accessible to the wealthiest of supers. I didn't know the specifics of an SPA officer's salary, but I imagined it wouldn't go very far toward having a witch or wizard enchant your entire wardrobe. Additionally, there was something about Agent Bramble that told me she enjoyed the process of treating her own clothing, that perhaps that's what she looked forward to doing on an otherwise lazy Saturday afternoon. "I apologize for the delay, Ms. Bolt," she said, taking her seat behind the desk. She reached up and smoothed her long fingers over her tidy bun, and then retrieved a large pad of paper from the top desk drawer. She placed it before her and reached back into the drawer for a pen. "You can call me Holly, if you'd like." "That's all right," she said. With a click, she lowered the pen to the page and jotted down a few notes. "Now, the main reason I wanted to see you today is in regard to your plans. In order to assign you a new caseworker, we need to know what you plan to do now that your temporary banishment has been lifted." I drew my eyebrows together as I watched her scribble notes. "What about Harvey?" She lifted her eyes but kept her pen poised against the page. "What about him?" "Well, I mean, is he... has there been..." I stopped and gave a slight shake of my head, refocusing my thoughts. "I assumed this meeting was to talk about his murder." Agent Bramble straightened and lowered her pen. "Have you thought of any other pertinent details?"
Well, no."
She gave me a confused look.
"Then what would there be to talk about?"
I drew in a quick breath and twisted my hands together in my lap.
"I want to help. That's all, Agent Bramble." "We appreciate that, Ms. Bolt. And of course, if there is anything you have to share, we are open to meeting at any time to discuss it. However, for now, that's all out of our hands. It's being investigated to the best of the SPA's abilities."
Right. It was a brush-off. Ever so polite, but it stung all the same. Harvey's murder was too personal for me to simply walk away.
"I would like to be kept in the loop," I said forcefully. "We still don't know what that note meant. It could very well have something to do with me.
He was with me right before he was poisoned. What if I'm the ally it was referring to? Agent Bramble plucked up her pen again.
You think you might be a target? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. It all feels a little too strange. The timing, I mean. He was supposed to testify for me, and then he gets this mystery call, and the next thing we know, he's dead.
I'm sure that was nothing but an unfortunate coincidence. However, I will pass along your concerns to the agents and officers investigating the case.
There was more I wanted to say, to argue, but Agent Bramble's gaze drifted back to her paperwork.
Now, back to the topic at hand, she said, starting to write again. Are you planning to move back to the Seattle Haven, or will you remain in...
She glanced over the papers, her eyebrows furrowed.
Beechwood Harbor, I supplied.
Yes, she wrote it down.
I don't have plans to move back to the Haven anytime soon. Without my potions license, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
She glanced up at the note of disappointment in my voice.
Right.
My lawyer, Teddy, is trying to get a second hearing, but I'm not getting my hopes up. She gave a quiet nod.
Probably for the best. I'll put down that you're staying in Beechwood Harbor.
We fell silent as she took down some additional notes. I vaguely wondered what she was writing down. As I waited, my eyes drifted back to the pigsty next door.
Where is Agent Mache?
I asked her.
Oh, out campaigning for his new job, I imagine.
There was a sharp edge, almost bitterness, to her reply. But as soon as the words echoed back to her, her dark eyes snapped to mine.
I mean, he's very busy. We all are.
Curiosity uncurled inside my stomach, but I ignored it. Agent Bramble didn't seem like the type who would take kindly to any sort of prodding.
Remind me what it is you do for work, Ms. Bolt? It says here that you work in a restaurant. Is that still correct?
I nodded, not bothering to differentiate between a coffee shop and a restaurant. What difference did it really make in the end? As long as I wasn't using magic on the job, the SPA really couldn't care less what I did upon waking each day. I could be a snow cone vendor in the Arctic and they wouldn't care. Agent Bramble asked a few other basic questions and then explained that I should have a new caseworker assigned to me by the end of the week. She said goodbye and herded me out of her office. I thanked her for her help and then asked to be pointed toward the nearest restroom. She rattled off the directions and then quickly ducked away, closing the door behind her. After a quick trip to the restroom, I wove back through the corridors and ended up in the same hallway as her office. The door had been reopened, and someone was standing in the doorway, halfway in and halfway out of her office. My footsteps slowed as I neared her open door. Agent Bramble's voice filtered out into the hall.
Don't think it's proper. It hasn't even been a week. I always knew he was an ambitious man, but this is extreme even for him.
The second voice made a sympathetic noise.
And before anyone goes around saying I'm jealous, I'm not. I have no desire to take Culpepper's place. This isn't about politics or my estimation of Mache's qualifications. It's a matter of propriety and not looking like we are all a bunch of sharks in the water.
My eyes widened at Agent Bramble's adamant words. It hadn't even occurred to me that Harvey's death would leave a desirable job vacancy inside the SPA. I only had a fragment of an idea as to the inner workings of the elite office. But as I hurried toward the elevator bank, I wondered for the first time if maybe Harvey's killer wasn't motivated by revenge or anger, but rather a desire to move up the SPA ladder. Maybe someone had wanted Harvey out of his prestigious office. Permanently.
Chapter 11. After leaving the SPA building, I wandered through the Haven. I didn't talk to anyone. I simply observed the comings and goings as the afternoon wound down and local restaurants ramped up for the impending dinner rush. As savory scents poured into the streets, I remembered my own evening plans and headed back to the SPA building to use the portal to get back to Beechwood Harbor. I'd been granted permission to use it for the duration of the investigation and planned to use it as much as possible. One step through a doorway and I was transported to the root cellar of a quaint bungalow on 13th Street, within the blink of an eye. Adam was jogging down the stairs when I pushed through the front door of the manor. He was wearing a pair of dark jeans, a navy blue t-shirt,
and his signature black leather jacket. He flashed a wide grin at me.
Perfect timing, gorgeous. Hey, would you mind if Evie and Teddy tagged along with us to dinner? Kind of a double date, if you will.
He wiggled his eyebrows, obviously quite impressed with his own detective skills.
That's fine, I replied, kicking out of my shoes. How was the meeting?
Just dandy.
Halls?
I glanced over at him. He was sitting on the bottom steps, lacing up his boots. He paused.
What happened?
It was a total waste of time. She didn't have any information about Harvey, and when I asked, she basically told me it wasn't any of my business, which is obviously ridiculous. Of course it's my business.
What did she want, then?
To ask me about my plans for the future. You know, now that I'm only a mild social pariah instead of a full-blown fugitive or whatever. Adam pushed to his feet.
Come here.
I shook my head. I'm fine. Let me go get changed so we can leave. Adam sighed, but didn't push it, as I hurried past him to the hall that led to my room. It was the only bedroom on the first floor. Lacey, Evangeline, and Adam were all housed upstairs. Boots unfolded himself from a pile of clothes on the end of the bed and blinked up at me as I pushed into the room. Normally, he was a miniature bulldozer when I came home, but apparently he'd been too busy napping to bother with it tonight. I stroked his fur, and he burst into a loud, rumbling purr. The sound soothed the edges of my frayed nerves, and I allowed myself a moment to sit beside him before getting ready. I don't even know what's wrong with me, Bootsy. I chewed on my lower lip and stared blankly out the windows that lined the opposite wall. They looked out over the generous side yard, a thatch of pristinely kept grass with a large rose bed that hedged the section of wraparound porch. The door that led out to the porch was in the study that adjoined my bedroom. None of us used the study, mostly because Posey liked it when she was in a dark mood, which, to be honest, was the majority of the time. If things were really bad, she'd be in the attic.
Do you think I should go back to the Haven?
I asked Boots, dropping my gaze to the orange fur ball. He rolled onto his back and stretched his expansive stomach into the air. I rolled my eyes but smiled to myself as I granted his unspoken request for belly rubs.
Oh, to have the life of a cat.
His eyes slid shut, clearly not in a helpful mood. His purring slowed as he fell back to sleep, and I stood to change into a cyan knee-length sweater dress, black leggings, and a pair of chocolate-colored suede booties. I layered a chunky statement necklace over the cowl neck of the dress, keeping the larkspur tucked underneath. For a moment, I thought about calling upon Grandmother Honeysuckle. She had recently proved to be useful when I hit bumps or was in full-blown crisis mode. However, regardless of her improved batting average, it still took way too long to cut through her preamble and get to the heart of the advice. I wasn't in the mood to try to pry her off the topic of my love life, not to mention the amount of time it took to gently remind her of my identity every time we spoke. No, Grandmother Honeysuckle was a last resort, and I wasn't quite that desperate yet. Not to mention I now had three people waiting on me for dinner. I slicked on a layer of lip gloss, freed my auburn hair from its braid, teased out the soft waves that remained, and went to meet the rest of my dinner companions in the foyer. Adam looked concerned, but I smiled and he relaxed and offered me his elbow.
You look beautiful, Holly.
Evangeline and Teddy smiled at us.
Thanks for letting us tag along,
Teddy said, one of his hands going to rest on the small of Evangeline's back.
I think we all need a night out on the town.
Evangeline smiled at her friend, or date, or whatever he was.
Agreed. And Holly, please tell me I can borrow that dress sometime. It's gorgeous.
I laughed.
Of course.
Evangeline was dressed casually. Well, casual for her. In a pair of skinny jeans and a bright jewel-toned top that looked even more vibrant against her caramel skin. She always looked amazing in rich or splashy colors. She and Teddy made an attractive couple. He was wearing a dove gray three-piece suit, as was his custom. His hair was pushed back from his face with a layer of gel that glistened as he moved under the light from the large chandelier hanging over the foyer. The two of them looked like they should be modeling together in a department store catalog. Evangeline smiled as Teddy moved her to the door and helped her into a long black coat that reached mid-calf. I tugged on my own coat, and let Adam usher me out the door.
Adam said you went to the Haven today?
Evangeline asked, as we walked down the steps and toward the sidewalk. McNally's was close enough that it didn't make sense to drive.
It was a whole lot of nothing, I said. Agent Bramble is basically playing matchmaker to find me a new caseworker and wanted to know what my plans are now that I'm able to return to the Haven.
Oh? Evangeline gave Adam a curious look.
I don't want to pry, but what are your plans?
I don't really know yet. I know I'm not planning to move back to the Haven. I stepped onto the sidewalk, careful not to scuff my boots in the gravel. At least not now. Adam glanced at me, but said nothing.
Hang in there, Teddy said, offering a reassuring smile. We'll get a second hearing and get you back on the track you want.
I nodded and tried to return his friendly smile, but it was fleeting. Conversation faded as we neared the restaurant. Adam held the door open and we all shuffled inside. McNally's is something of a local watering hole, and most of the faces gathered around the tables and along the bar were locals. Some offered quiet nods or looks of recognition as we entered. It was strange that a group of supernaturals could blend in so well. If only they knew. I thought back to when Gabriel and I had been together. He'd always been something of an outcast in Haven society, which should have been a red flag. However, I'd been an outcast all my life, so it didn't seem so odd to me. The stigma attached to my last name, thanks to my family heritage, was not easy to overcome. I'd never been able to walk around the Haven with my head held high, not a care in the world. I'd always secretly worried that people were talking about me behind my back, and it was a given that other witches and wizards were going to judge me as soon as they learned my family name. It was ironic that the only place where I could finally shrug all that off my shoulders was a tiny little coastal town made up mostly of humans who had no idea magic was real, let alone knew that several supernatural beings lived and worked in their sleepy community on a daily basis. There was something comforting about living under the radar. It allowed me to truly be the best version of myself. In that light, I wondered why I would ever consider returning to the Haven. Why would I want to subject myself to living among those who thought of me as a second-class citizen simply because I'd been born into a notorious bloodline? Adam took my hand when the chirpy hostess announced that our table was ready. I tucked away the thoughts and smiled, my mind suddenly lighter as we wound through the dining room to a table in the far corner. Once we were seated, the conversation turned to Harvey's murder and whether or not I'd gathered any more information since the initial meeting with the SBA agents. Teddy was the one most interested in the case and asked a series of questions.
They didn't say anything about the case when you were at headquarters today?
Nothing more than the standard boilerplate speech. I shook my head and used my straw to stab at the slice of lemon bobbing along with the ice cubes in my iced tea. I got the feeling I wasn't welcome to ask a lot of questions about it. Something strange did happen, though. I recounted the snippet of conversation I'd overheard before leaving, as well as the comment Agent Bramble had made about Agent Mache campaigning for Harvey's job.
That was the word she used? Teddy asked. Campaigning?
Yeah. I tilted my head at him. It seemed odd somehow.
Also a little soon,
Teddy added, as our server delivered our salads.
What exactly was Harvey's title?
Evangeline asked me. She was delicately picking her way through her house salad, separating the tomatoes from the pile of greens.
I always forget to ask them to leave them off, she added, mostly to herself.
I shrugged. I never really asked. But I can tell you one thing. From looking at the office spaces alone, it's obvious now that Harvey was somewhere near the top of the food chain. Evangeline frowned up at me.
I always thought he was... Well, I don't know, just a regular agent. Why would you be assigned to such a bigwig?
Adam leaned in conspiratorially and flashed a wicked grin.
Secretly, Holly's a government-sanctioned assassin.
I bit out a laugh. Right. And my weapons of choice? Plants and pastries?
A caffeine-powered supervillain,
Evangeline added. We all laughed. But when it died away, it was clear her question remained unanswered. Harvey was my assigned agent since my parents died. I was just a girl. I'd never given it much thought, but I assume he was a normal agent when I was first assigned to him, and has since risen in the ranks.
Maybe. But then why didn't he have you reassigned once he'd risen to the top?
Adam asked, before his eyes went wide, and he smiled. I didn't even bother turning to look over my shoulder to see what had captured his attention. With Adam, it was always one thing. Food. Sure enough, the conversation lulled as the server approached and dished out four entrees. When she'd gone, I picked up my fork and lifted it over the pile of steaming pasta. Maybe there's some kind of lifetime appointment rule?
I don't think so. Teddy shook his head. Not that I've ever heard of. There's a whole branch of Haven Law that deals with disputes between citizens and their assigned caseworkers. It's hard to get a transfer, but not impossible, if the grievances are taken seriously enough before the council.
I twisted my lips into a pout. There had certainly been at least a dozen times I'd have liked to explore that option. Although, looking back, I was grateful to have been stuck with Harvey, especially now as I waited to meet whoever would be assigned to me next.
I guess he just liked you, Halls, Adam teased. The fiery daughter he never had.
A perfect 1 second played out before Adam, Evangeline, and I all burst out laughing. Chapter 12. The conversation from the night before continued to play through my mind the following day while I worked my shift at Siren Song. The amount of clues I had were hardly enough to even form a basic theory on what had happened after Harvey left Council Hall. I still didn't know if he'd ever planned to testify on my behalf. Whatever the reason was for his sudden departure, there were a dozen other questions lurking. Where had he gone immediately after leaving Council Hall? Who had called him away? From the crime scene, it seemed he'd been dosed with poison while inside the cab. But what had he been doing outside the Haven? His assistant had confirmed that Harvey wasn't one to leave the Haven, yet he'd gone to an off-the-books, last-minute meeting outside the Haven in a cab. None of the pieces made sense individually, let alone when put together. So far, my best guess was that he'd been meeting with some kind of top-secret informant. Maybe in regard to the Praxel case, since it was headlining the investigation at the moment? Or had it been someone outside the SPA world? A friend or family member? But then the note found in his pocket didn't make any sense. That was something to do with his role at the SBA. It had to be. But maybe it had been there for days. Maybe he'd simply forgotten about it. I held each scenario up to the light, twisted it, inspected each angle. But ultimately, none of the theories rang true. Particularly depressing was the realization that in all the investigations I'd gotten tangled up in over the past months, I'd always had a partner by my side. It was the first time I didn't have Nick's guidance or advice. He was a former newspaper reporter turned PI, and always seemed to have the next three steps mapped out at any given moment. I was sure that if I could share the details of Harvey's case, he would have rock-solid advice for me. Even if I could find a way to frame it without the supernatural elements, I knew it wasn't a good idea to burden Nick with my problems. Besides, there was no way he wouldn't go digging around trying to figure out what case I was referring to. Would he buy it if I said it was from a TV show? Thinking about Nick only made me feel worse. Since his unintended stay at the manor, I'd been avoiding him. I didn't know what to say or how to act. He knew me too well. He'd see right through my phony attempts at light conversation while I was really using the entire conversation to mine him for clues as to what parts of the SPA raid he remembered. I wondered if his brush with the supernatural world would ever fully leave him. Part of me wondered if the reason the memory spell hadn't completely taken was because Nick already possessed some sort of inkling that the world around him wasn't quite the way it seemed. If somehow his open-mindedness created a tiny fissure the spell hadn't been able to block. Most humans seemed eager for normalcy. They didn't want to believe. So if they ever encountered something that even hinted at a hidden truth, they would fight until they snapped back to the safety of their familiar world like a rubber band.
Everything all right, Holly?
I jumped at Cassie's cheerful voice. I hurried to nod and added a smile for good measure. She was sweeping near the double doors that led to the back patio, but paused and leaned on the broom handle to examine me. Rain streaked down the glass panels, and the tables and chairs beyond were soaked from the drizzly day.
You sure? You seem a little out of it today. Still in a post-vacation funk?
Something like that, I suppose. I shifted my eyes across the room to the front door, wondering if we'd seen our last customer of the day. It was right around the time that Nick usually wandered over to Siren Song before heading to his condo across town. But Cassie had informed me earlier in the day that she hadn't seen him since I'd taken my vacation. Cassie resumed sweeping the empty dining room, moving chairs as she went.
Where did you end up going? I completely forgot to ask you the other night when we had dinner. Somewhere with Adam?
I shook my head and tore my eyes off the front walk outside the small coffee shop. I went to visit a friend in Seattle.
Oh, that sounds nice. I haven't been to Seattle in ages. It's odd that it can be so close, but somehow out of reach.
She smiled to herself.
Maybe I can talk Jeffrey into going away for a weekend. In a couple of months, tourist season will be here and I won't have any time.
That sounds like a good plan. I can always run things here if you want to sneak away for a few days.
Thanks, Holly. That's really sweet of you.
I ducked my chin in a quick nod. Truthfully, I wasn't sure I should have committed to the offer. After all, things were still up in the air with the case, and if Teddy were to somehow finagle a last-minute meeting before the council, I needed to be ready to drop everything and go. Then again, Chief Lincoln, Cassie's boyfriend and town police chief, didn't strike me as the type to do anything on a whim. He'd probably require 12 weeks of planning for something like a weekend getaway, even if they were only traveling a few hours out of town.
If you want to add up the tips, I can take care of the rest, Cassie said as she rounded the counter.
She stashed the broom in the back room and reappeared, dusting her hands off on her apron.
I'm working on ironing out some schedule conflicts, so I'll be here late tonight.
Schedule conflicts? She sighed and tucked a loose strand of her chestnut hair back into a low ponytail that was hanging over one shoulder.
Paisley is going to a wedding in Florida and wants a few extra days to bookend the event. Then at the same time, Kira needs a few short shifts so she has time to study for a big test she has coming up. I'll figure it out.
Well, let me know if you need me to pick up some extra shifts. I don't mind. I hadn't told Cassie about my side business going bust. Mostly because that would require saying it out loud. Something I wasn't prepared to do just yet.
I will,
she said with a smile. She went to break down the espresso machine, and I turned my attention to divvying up the tip money from the jar standing to the side of the single register on the counter. There were still a few minutes left until closing time, but it was rare for us to have last-minute stragglers. Most days were completely dead for the final half hour. By the time it was officially closing time, the till was counted, tips were divided, and the espresso machine was cleaned and stood ready for a new day. Cassie pocketed her tips and said goodbye to me before disappearing into the back office. She'd been getting better at keeping her hours manageable, and she had help at home to prepare dinner for her father, who had been disabled in a work accident several years before and couldn't always get around if he was having a particularly painful day. From what she'd told me, she and Chief Lincoln had been spending more time at his place, something she was only able to do since hiring a full-time caregiver to help out at home. Most people around town were betting a proposal wasn't too far away, and for once I agreed with the gossip mill. I turned off the open sign and locked up on my way out. I paused under the awning and looked up and down the street. The rain had let up, and I stood for a few moments, mentally weighing my options. I couldn't ignore Nick forever, and if there was a reason he was avoiding me, I wanted to know about it. My mind made up, I hurried across the street and made a quick dash through town to get to Nick's office before the lingering dark clouds let loose again. The log cabin had once been a primary residence for one of the town's oldest families. However, some time ago it had been rezoned and transformed into a group of cozy offices. Nick ran his private investigator business out of the smallest office in the building, a 12-by-12 space at the end of the hall on the first floor. Light shone through his frosted glass door, so I reached for the handle. Soft music drifted from the office as I pulled the door open, a bluesy instrumental. Nick looked up when I entered and smiled widely.
Hey there, stranger.
Hey yourself. I let the door fall closed behind me and took my place in one of the navy blue armchairs sitting at an angle before his large oak desk. Nick's office was a perfect reflection of himself. Dark woods and tasteful navy blue and brass accents lent the space an elegant but unpretentious air. Not a knick-knack out of place, but still casual enough to feel lived in, unlike some offices I'd visited that felt more like a museum or art gallery than a place where work occurred.
"Just getting off work?"
he asked, after clicking his computer mouse a few times.
"Yeah, I thought I'd stop in and see how you're doing. We've missed you over at the coffee shop."
"I've just been busy," he smiled.
"What about you?"
"I'm good." I nodded, but immediately felt awkward as silence fell between us. If there was one thing Nick and I were good at, it was talking. When we got quiet, it was sharp and uncomfortable. I wanted to know if he was still searching for answers regarding the things he saw at Raven, a supernatural nightclub hidden in an abandoned building outside of town, but couldn't quite find a way to bring it up naturally.
"How's business?"
I asked instead, hoping to buy some time to find a way to swing things in that direction. His desk was littered with folders I knew contained case notes. He liked to keep paper copies of all his notes, pictures, and other reference items. I leaned forward.
"Anything interesting?"
He considered the stacks with a shrug.
"One woman hired me to see if I could find the daughter she put up for adoption 20 years ago. The records were sealed, so it's been tricky. That's taking up most of my time right now. A few other cases have come and gone."
"I'm glad you're keeping busy." Nick nodded, but his eyes roved over his desk, his mind clearly elsewhere.
"Nick, is everything all right?"
He glanced up at me. A sudden intensity charged his eyes, making them electric blue.
"Have you ever had a repeating dream? The kind you have every night and can't seem to get out of your head?"
My spine stiffened.
"I don't think so. I've had the same dream every night for over a week now. When I wake up, it's like it's still playing in the back of my mind. I'm starting to lose track of what's real and what's not real."
Nick frowned down at his hands, which were folded in front of him on the desk.
"You're in it."
"Oh?" A strange laugh burst from Nick as he realized the connotation of his statement. He held up a hand.
"Not anything like that. It's here in town. Well, actually a little outside of town. It's funny, I never paid much attention to that old run-down liquor store on the edge of town, but for whatever reason, that's where this whole thing takes place. Somehow it's wedged in the back of my mind."
Dread washed over me, and I had to remind myself to breathe, slow and steady, in and out. Every muscle clenched as I waited for Nick's revelation to continue.
"Then things get weird."
He looked at me, like expecting a friendly, curious question, but all my energy was channeled into not gripping the arms of my chair so tightly I'd leave permanent marks in the fabric. I struggled to remain passive, even as my heart thundered frantically, loud enough that it echoed in my eardrums. When Nick didn't get a reaction out of me, he waved a hand.
"Never mind. You don't want to hear about all this."
"No, no, please, finish your story." I didn't want to know, but I had to all the same. It was part of the reason I'd stopped in. Only in hindsight did I realize I wasn't fully prepared to know the truth about his memories of that night. I'd been hoping the meeting would alleviate my conscience, not drag me farther into panic mode.
"Well, there were these different creatures,"
Nick continued, gesturing with his hand as though he could still see them swarming the parking lot of the liquor store.
"Balls of light in all different colors and intensities. Angry men and women with
fangs."
"Fangs?"
I tried to give a lighthearted laugh. "Goodness, Nick, maybe you should check the expiration date on the cold medicine you've been taking." He smiled, but I could see a flicker of disappointment behind his eyes. He'd wanted something else from me, some other kind of reaction.
"Yeah," he said with a shallow laugh. "Probably should. It's pretty messed up. The other night it changed a little. I was wandering around in your backyard. I thought I saw... well, I thought I saw a ghost."
"Really?" I said, struggling to keep my voice calm.
"What did she, or he, look like?"
Nick considered the question for a moment.
"Kind of like my elementary school librarian. Mrs. Gilbert. I tried to laugh, but the sound was mangled somehow. Guilt twisted through me, binding my insides into a tight knot. As I watched him, I was suddenly overwhelmed with the urge to come clean. There'd been a few moments over the years since we'd met that I'd wanted to confide in Nick. Stars knew it would be easier than trying to hide everything about myself. If nothing else, it would be nice to let Evangeline lose her cleaning spells after Thanksgiving dinner.
It's probably the cold medicine. You're right. I'll buy a new bottle on my way home.
Nick stared at me for another long moment, as though daring me to correct him. When it was clear I had nothing to add, he pushed up from the desk. He leaned over and clicked a few things on his computer and then started pulling on his thick peacoat.
I suppose I better call it a night. Thanks for stopping by to see me, Holly.
I hurried to get up, feeling even worse at his dismissal. He'd never shooed me out of his office before. He was far too polite to say it, but something shifted in that moment. Almost like he knew the truth and had been setting up a test for me. A test I'd failed miserably. Chapter 13. Back at the manor, Teddy and Evangeline pounced on me as soon as I walked through the door. Before I even had my coat off my shoulders, they were tripping over each other to explain what they'd spent the afternoon working on.
"We've got something to show you," Evangeline started.
"Can we do this in the kitchen? I really need some tea." I turned, hung my coat on one of the pegs beside the door, and tried to pull myself together. Evangeline nodded and led the way, so wrapped up in whatever they'd been doing that she didn't notice my lack of enthusiasm. Teddy was more perceptive and sidled up beside me as we crossed through the large living room.
"Are you all right?"
I nodded. "Just a long day at work," I lied. Teddy looked skeptical but didn't press further. He hadn't known me very long, but I imagined working as a lawyer for over a decade made him better at reading people than most. In the kitchen, Evangeline was already working to spread a selection of glossy papers over the large farm-style table that dominated the eat-in nook to the side of the L-shaped kitchen. I bypassed the table and went to work lighting a burner under my giant ceramic kettle. While I waited for the water to heat up, I added a generous scoop of my favorite soothing blend of tea, made with herbs from the greenhouse, into the largest mug I owned.
"Teddy called a few of his contacts in the Los Angeles Haven to see if they have any idea what's going on in Seattle. Turns out, Harvey served as the head of the entire crime division in Seattle and was also appointed as the grand investigator, which means he had a seat at the table whenever the biggest decisions within the SPA were made. He held one of the top SPA jobs on the entire West Coast."
"Well, that explains the fancy office," I said, mostly to myself.
I turned and propped myself against the counter as the water in the kettle started to heat up. I eyed the papers she'd fanned out on the table, but was too far away to see much more than colorful images and lines of text. Once I'd had a few sips of tea, I'd go closer and investigate.
"Have there been any breakthroughs in the investigation?"
I asked, not particularly interested in what he used to do at the SPA besides babysit me. Teddy nodded. He'd positioned his chair at an angle so he could look at both Evangeline and me.
"The poison coffee was purchased at Magic Beans, the coffee shop that serves as a portal between Seattle proper and the Haven."
That caught my attention.
"So Harvey left Council Hall, went into Seattle proper via the portal and got coffee before flagging down a cab?"
"Or he met with someone and they brought the coffee with them," Teddy countered thoughtfully.
"True.
Maybe the killer was some kind of informant. Maybe that's why they had to meet outside the Haven."
"It's certainly possible," Teddy said. "I know the SPA works with all sorts of supers to keep a finger on the pulse of the various groups. It's best to be at least one step ahead of the next vampire-werewolf war. Those always get nasty."
"No kidding," I said. "I mean, if Kate Beckinsale can't fix it, what hope do the rest of us have?" Teddy and Evangeline stared at me blankly.
"Underworld?" I prompted. "Epic vampires versus werewolves movie?"
"Never heard of it," Teddy said. Evangeline shrugged. I rolled my eyes.
"You guys are from Los Angeles, the home of entertainment."
The water in the kettle was at a rolling boil,
I turned my attention to preparing my tea and then joined Teddy and Evangeline at the table. I stood, hovering over Teddy with my cup halfway to my lips as the steam poured off the dark green liquid. As I breathed in the medicinal scent of mint leaves and other herbs and spices, I perused the spread of papers. "So we don't know who Harvey was meeting, or why. We also don't know what happened to the driver of the taxi he was found in." I sighed heavily. It seemed there were more blank spots than not. "What are these, then?" I asked, gesturing at the pages spread over the tabletop.
"Harriet sent these over. All of these are cases Harvey was involved with that were considered hostile," Evangeline explained. "We got copies of the most interesting ones. As you can imagine, most of the really dangerous supers Harvey helped put away are still serving their sentences. Most will never get out. However, there are a few who have been released."
"Is that Praxel?" I asked, recognizing the smarmy man from the Witchwire coverage. Evangeline nodded.
"If Praxel goes down, he will lose a lot of money. Harvey was instrumental in getting his case before the council where other investigations have failed. There are reports of Praxel threatening Harvey in front of other agents."
My eyebrows lifted. "Sounds like motive to me." Teddy nodded slowly. "The only problem is that he was in his own hearing at the time of the murder." "He could have hired someone," I suggested. "I agree that it's worth considering." Teddy reached out and plucked one of the sheets from the collection. "This guy is especially interesting to me."
I looked at the picture in his hand. The face of a shaggy-looking man glared at me from the page.
Shifter, if I had to guess. Something large and predatory. A bear? They usually tended to like the gruff lumberjack look. Some pulled it off better than others. The face staring back at me was less brawny paper towel mascot and more unwashed hermit.
"Why's that?"
Teddy's rosy lips twisted into an expression that was a mix between a scowl and a frown.
"In my experience, most criminals tend to lay low once they're released from an SBA prison. But this guy, Dune Casey, he runs right to the press, almost the same day he's released. Says he wants to give a tell-all account that could possibly take down the SBA. Or my guess, he was hoping to get some kind of settlement for what he claims was mistreatment."
My eyebrows hitched up. "That's bold." Teddy bristled.
"Stupid is more like it."
Evangeline smiled at Teddy's response.
"What's his complaint?" I asked. "He claims he was framed, and that even after he presented concrete evidence, he was still found guilty."
"And Harvey's connection?" Evangeline took over.
"He had a meeting with Harvey, the lead on the case at the time, and presented his evidence. But 3 weeks later, Harvey testified against him anyway."
I frowned. "Is that really enough motive to murder someone?" Teddy looked up at me.
"It is when he claims the evidence he presented to Harvey was buried and not presented to the council."
"Hmm. And would it have gotten him off the hook?"
"That's the problem," Teddy replied. "The evidence, whatever it was, vanished. Harvey never put it into the case notes. All it says is that a meeting occurred. Whatever they discussed wasn't recorded."
"Harvey was certainly capable of burying things," I said, frowning.
"Look, all of this might add up to nothing, but it may be worth looking into," Evangeline said.
Teddy nodded in agreement.
"Really, at this point, the only thing we know for sure is that there appears to be quite a few people who might have wanted revenge on Harvey."
"Guess being at the top isn't all it's cracked up to be," I said, frowning at the angry faces staring back at me from the pictures. "I'll read through it, although I'm not sure what I can do even if something does look fishy. Agent Bramble certainly doesn't seem to want my help with the investigation." Evangeline smiled.
"That sounds familiar."
"What do you mean?"
"If you can find a way to work with Chief Lincoln, you can find a way to work with Agent Bramble."
I smiled. "I suppose that's true. Thanks, you guys." The following morning, I got out of bed before the sun was even up. Normally, I despised early mornings. They were a necessary evil of working at a coffee shop. On my days off, I rarely woke before 8:30, but that morning, sleep was impossible to come by, and lying in bed staring blankly at the darkened ceiling was more miserable than facing the prospect of rising before the sun. My bedroom was freezing cold, and I quickly bundled into a thick robe and two pairs of fuzzy socks. Boots stirred on the bed, and when I tossed a soft orb of light into the air, I caught a flash of amber eyes staring up at me.
Sorry, Bootsy. Go back to sleep.
His eyes slid closed, and I waved a hand to send the